thank you for inviting me, and yeah, I'm sure we'll have a good conversation today and learn some things. And burnout is such a such a relevant topic in the world we're living in today. So
definitely, thanks, Itapa. Of course, as anyway, as always, anyone can just respond and send messages down below. You're always welcome to, and we'll respond as needed. And just so, Sitapa, do you want to just give an introduction about, if I've missed anything about yourself, you want to say anything about who you are?
No, I think you summed it up pretty well. I grew up in Northwest London in Wembley, near Wembley Stadium. And yeah, I guess when I was 15, 16, had a kind of spiritual curiosity that was growing within me. And during my years at university, it really kind of, yeah, developed and evolved more and more. And after I graduated, I went to India at the age of 21 and then became a monk, and have been a monk ever since for about 2 decades. It was my 40th birthday last week.
Well, happy belated birthday,
by the way. So yeah, time has flown by, and yeah, really learning, still learning more and more every day.
Happy belated birthday, man. I'm so sorry I forgot. I'm going to blame Anish and JD for that. Maybe myself. Happy belated birthday. Was it good? Did you have a good one?
It was great. It was great. Yeah, it's I tend to be quite a shy person, so like being in the spotlight is a little difficult, a little uncomfortable, but it's wonderful to get the encouragement and the good wishes of all the friends and everyone. So it was, yeah, it was a nice day.
We've got a message from Danish who says, like, big up. He goes, Wembley massive. That's what he said. That's Northwest London.
Yeah. I haven't been back to Wembley in a long time, but I'm sure it's doing good.
I'm sure it's doing well. So thank you for coming on the show. Happy belated birthday again. Just for those of you, or those of us don't know, could you mind defining what burnout is? What is burnout?
I guess burnout, I mean, different people define it in different ways, but in essence, burnout is when you almost have like emotional, physical exhaustion, and you just can't carry on with your current level of activity, your current level of functioning, and you almost just need to step out of your, you know, your normal life, and because it just becomes too much. So I think that's what it is. Basically, it's just exhaustion.
Okay, just exhaustion. And so what do you think, like, you know, how are there any things to, do you think a lot of people are burnt out today, or do you think people are surviving really well? Do you think burnout is a big thing, or do you think it's not really a big thing? Do you think people are making a big mountain out of a molehill?
Yeah, no, I think it is. Obviously, it is a huge thing. I mean, we find that, you know, stress is really, really high. You know, the pharmaceutical industry, antidepressants, the need for kind of, you know, different kinds of medication to deal with kind of mental imbalance or difficulties is skyrocketing. We find more and more people needing therapy, people needing psychiatric assistance. You're a doctor, you know this better than me. And even on a physical level, in terms of health, you know, like people's health is just not, it's not as good as it could be, you know. So clearly there is an imbalance in people's lifestyles, and in general, there's an imbalance in the world. Perhaps one of the, you know, the good things that has come out of COVID is just the opportunity to step back and just see our life for what it is, because we've kind of been forced to stop and step out of that treadmill to some extent. So I'm sure it has revealed a lot of things to many people. The question remains as to when the world does open up again, whether it will be a permanent effect on people or whether it will just be business as usual. But for sure, it's a huge problem. Burnout is, it's huge. And I think all of us have experienced it at some point in our life.
Yes. I think that's actually a very valid point. Have you ever experienced burnout at all?
Yeah, you'd be surprised because you almost think like monks. Monks, they just pray. They just have like they're all about serenity, seclusion. They're all about, the otherworldly pursuits. And you almost think like, why would a monk ever get burnt out? We do live a monastic life, but we're very much integrated with the world, and we're trying to serve people. We're going out there, really interfacing with society. And so to some extent, we are very active. We're active renunciates. And therefore, even we're susceptible to it, and we have to learn how to structure our life in such a way that we're able to remain consistent in what we do and have well-being on all levels. Because as you're a doctor, but each one of us are doctors and we're patients as well. And unless we take care of ourselves, we can't take care of others.
It's actually quite amazing when you're talking about the fact that you keep giving a lot, right? As a monk, obviously you have to live a very monastic life, but you have to also be serving and giving, right? I actually gave a talk to some teachers this morning about, they always tend to be giving and giving and giving. And it's quite interesting how, no, I just have had this realization now how monks and also doctors and teachers, that we're kind of very giving people. And kind of like the more you give, the more you have to make sure you have your own boundaries or your own well-being in place. Otherwise, you can get really burnt out, right? As a monk
Yeah,
or as a doctor, I thought
100%. Yeah,
monks would get burnt
100%.
out.
In normal time, outside of COVID, what I do is every year in the month of January, I go to a very sacred place in India, and I almost like leave my phone behind, leave my laptop behind, almost like go off the grid for 1 month. And it's really a month of realigning my priorities, reassessing my lifestyle, kind of reflecting on my goals and my future, and ultimately re-energizing myself so I can come back into the world and really try to give people something. Because yeah, I think I'll quote Saint Francis of Assisi, who once said, I preach every day. I preach 7 days a week, week after week, year after year. And now and again, I say something. So that was quite interesting because he was making the point that our entire being, who we are, what we exude, our aura, our, just our energy affects people. And you can say so many things, but if you're not living it, if you don't embody it, then it has, limited impact. So yeah, so much of what we offer to the world is related to the inner contents of who we really are. And for that, we have to take care and we have to take time.
Yeah, it's almost like, I try and practice what I preach when I tell patients to meditate or when they do something like, change your diet or do those sorts of things or, drink more water. I have to be what practice what I preach, otherwise it's not so effective, right? If I'm a fat doctor and like you should exercise, it's like, you have to be, I mean, you can, of course, I'm not, no offense to people that are bigger, but it's kind of a more impactful and it's a more, I suppose not authentic, but it's a more impactful statement if you practice what you preach because you can really feel and hear what you're going through, right? And they can tell, sort of empathize a lot more with the patient or the client or whoever, if I
Yes,
understand.
they say, I can't hear what you're saying because your character is speaking so loud. So
Wow.
almost if what we are is so obvious to people, obviously
Yeah.
contrary to the message that we're giving them, then it doesn't matter how much of a good orator or how much you've got the gift of the gab to communicate a message, what you're living will speak much louder. As monks, we are in the business, if you like, of not just giving people physical and emotional well-being, but really helping them to connect on a spiritual level as well. And you can't take the world to a higher place than you've reached yourself, So if we're really trying to elevate people in a quality way, then we have to live it.
Wow, it's similar to how I have to do. Like, it's kind of quite a good realization for myself. So when I talk to patients, it's like I have to live what I preach, right? About simple changes, lifestyle changes. I have to, if you embody it more, then it, you can help patients or help people elevate their consciousness even to a high level, right? Which is quite interesting.
Yeah, I'll just share one thing on that. When you communicate a message, and I know we're talking about the same point, but different angles of vision. When you say something, you're not just communicating words, but there's a voice. You see, words are there, but then there's a voice behind it. And people cling on to that voice, and that voice is more than the words. That voice is our genuine conviction, our inspiration, our deep realization of something we're saying. And along with the words, when people pick up on our faith, our enthusiasm, our inspiration, our conviction, our realization of something, then that message goes further. So yeah, definitely.
And just to got a message as well, someone said our energy impacts us and everyone around us. How do we not get attached to our opinion, and how are we able to discuss it?
Yeah, we live in a world where we're constantly interacting with people. Many of the people have the same opinion as us. Many people have different opinion to us. The first thing I would say is that one person once said to me, every disagreement doesn't have to be an argument. And the point they were making to me is that when we disagree, or when we have a different opinion to other people, or other people have a different opinion to us, as we would say, it actually holds a potential for incredible amounts of growth. If you deal with differences of opinion in an appropriate way, when someone has a different opinion to you, it may allow you to see something from a different perspective and edify your understanding in a way that you may not have thought about previously. So differences of opinion can elevate your understanding. Another thing is differences of opinion can help you to elevate your character, because when there are differences of opinion, you're forced to bring qualities like patience, empathy, tolerance. You're forced to bring these qualities to the forefront, otherwise that disagreement will end up in an argument. So when there's a disagreement or a difference of opinion, it's an opportunity to upgrade your character as well. And what I would say is disagreements and differences of opinion are a great way to upgrade the quality of your relationship with that person. Sometimes the best friends are not the friends who always agree with each other, but the friends who learn from each other. And even when they disagree, they still have respect. If I asked you, like, think of the three people that you have the closest relationship with, and I'm sure you never agree with those three people all the time. In fact, there's a good chance that you probably disagree with those three people quite a lot, but they're still your best friends. Why? Because actually, there's a sense in which you want to be friends with someone who's slightly different to you, because that helps you both to grow. There's a certain interaction. So in response to that question about how we deal with different opinions, every disagreement doesn't have to be an argument. And remember that every disagreement is an opportunity to upgrade your understanding, upgrade your own character, and upgrade your relationships. And so next time you come across someone who disagrees with you, get excited, as it's an opportunity for growth.
That doesn't also mean just don't have arguments for the sake of having an argument. Just, you know.
No, but the point is not to have an argument. But you know what? Like, you see, say I want to build up my muscles, right? Then if I lift this pencil, I could do 100 movements like that. I'm not going to build my muscle, doctor, right? Why am I not going to build my muscle if I move like that 100 times?
You're asking me.
Yeah, well, you're a doctor.
The load's not big enough to cause hyper. Well, basically, you're not breaking down muscle. You're not causing muscle atrophy. So you get muscle hypertrophy.
Why do you need a load?
Well, to increase the growth of the muscle.
And why does a load increase the growth of the muscle?
You're challenging it, isn't it? You're causing it.
Challenging it. There's resistance. Yeah. Where there's resistance, there's growth. So, yeah, think about when you encounter people who have different opinions, think about it like going to the gym. Here I am encountering, you know, I'm training my inner muscles now by interacting with someone. So, yeah, you say that, but, you know, like one thing I would say is, yeah, nowadays I actively look for people who disagree with me and have conversations with them, because it creates a different type of growth.
But there's a different, I don't want to get down this, but there's a, like, if you're having a relationship, you shouldn't be arguing all the time. And also if you've got a friendship, true. There's a difference, right? There's a relationship is different to a conversation with a friend, right? It's a difference.
Yeah, between. No, that's true. That's true. Yeah. There has to be there has to be like-mindedness, and there has to be, you know, a certain level of being on the same wavelength. And then there is definitely individuality and difference within that. And yeah, for sure, you have to be balanced in that. Yeah,
sure. So I think we sort of touched. Thank you. So thanks for that, Priya. So coming back to the original point is how to avoid burnout. You know, it's interesting. If monks get burnout, right? Monks are supposed to be the peak of serenity, right? If they get burnout, I mean, let alone the whole society getting burnout, it's pretty obvious what happened, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you avoid burnout? I think you sort of touched on that topic.
I'm going to give you like three Sanskrit words. And I think these three Sanskrit words are like the key. One of the words is dharma, which many of you may have heard of. Another word is sattva. And another word is prema. Right. So if anyone's on the chat or whatever on Facebook, you can just put those three words in so we remember dharma, sattva, and prema. Okay. So this would be kind of my top tip based on the ancient sages and their insights of how to avoid burnout. The first thing is you have to perform the right activities in your life. And that relates to dharma. Dharma is a Sanskrit word which means your kind of your duty, your purpose, your inner calling. Your dharma is basically that thing that you're wired to do. It's kind of like your psychophysical makeup. You know, like some people are just wired to make money. Some people are just wired to teach. Some people are just wired in such a way that they're very, very simple and they avoid complexity and are very, very content with very little. Each one of us have our unique dharma, our unique psychophysical personality. And oftentimes we burn out because we're functioning outside of our dharma. In other words, we're doing the wrong activities. So the first top tip to overcome burnout or to avoid burnout in the first place is do the right activities, which means live in dharma. But now let me go further. And then I'm just going to say these three things, then I'll open it up to you. Not only do you have to do the right activities, but you also have to have the right lifestyle. Yeah. And this relates to the word sattva. In the ancient text known as the Bhagavad Gita, it's explained that there are three influences that that surround us in the world we live in. One of the influences is tamas, which means ignorance. Another influence is rajas, which means passion. And another influence is sattva, which means goodness. They're very, very deep concepts, but essentially ignorance means inactivity. Passion means activity which is imbalanced, and goodness means balanced, steady activity and lifestyle. And so what Krishna does in the Bhagavad Gita is he explains that if one lives a life in the kind of pervaded by goodness, in the mode of goodness, then they'll be able to have steadiness, peace of mind, and longevity in whatever they do. So we don't just have to do the right activities, but we have to have the right lifestyle. And a right lifestyle means living in sattva, or living in goodness. So there is, believe it or not, there's like food, which is in the mode of goodness. There's a way in which you can structure your environment so that it's in the mode of goodness. Driving your car, you can do it in the mode of goodness. How you parent your children can be done in the mode of goodness. And so this mode of goodness is a way of functioning that can be applied to every single aspect of your lifestyle. And when you imbibe the mode of goodness, you avoid burnout. So the first one was do the right activities, live in your dharma. The second thing is have the right lifestyle, live in sattva. And the third thing is have the right motivation, right? Many times we do the right activities and we have the right lifestyle, but we have the wrong motivation. Many times we're acting because we're acting to please others. We're acting based on expectations of the world around us. We're acting because there's a pressure. The real reason why we should do anything in this world is prema. And prema is a Sanskrit word which means love. When what you're doing in the world is driven by love, when you love what you do, when you have feeling, when you believe deeply in the reason why you're functioning in the world, then you'll be very unlikely to burn out. But when the motivation for our movement in this world is not prema, it's not love, but it's some other material thing which is pushing us, there'll be a very good chance that you have burnout. And so these are my three top tips for how to avoid burnout. Right activities, live in your dharma. Right lifestyle, live in sattva. And right motivation, live driven by prema or love. And this can be very, very powerful.
Wow, extremely, extremely deep. Thank you. I'll just wondering, but you know, talking about motivation, most people are driven not by prema, by love, but by money, right? Money is what drives people. How can you be driven by love? If you're driven by love, you'd just be going out there giving hugs to people. I don't know, like a tree hugger. How can you, you know, how do you find that focus of being, it's incredible what you're saying, but how do you focus on not being financially focused, which we're all brainwashed to do, but be focused on motivation and be solely motivated by love?
The first thing is living in dharma, living in sattva, living out of prema. It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
It's a goal. It's an aspiration. And what we have to do is gradually we have to begin molding our life in that direction. Many, many small changes will lead to a big change over time. So you're not going to just fall into your dharma overnight. You're not just going to fall into sattva overnight. And you're not just going to have a life driven by love overnight. But you can do different things. Like say, for example, one of our friends, he was working as a lawyer and he was earning good money. And he was doing well. But it wasn't his dharma. It wasn't his calling. Being a lawyer didn't really move him. He wasn't going into work because he loved it. He was going into work because it made him money. So what did he do? Did he just quit his job and start doing what he loved doing? No, because he has two kids and he has a mortgage and he has many, many responsibilities. But what did he do? He said, you know what? I'm going to work for 4 days instead of 5 days. As a lawyer, I'll still get money coming in. And on that fifth day, I'm going to start doing something I love. And I'm going to start seeing whether what I love doing can earn me a living at the same time. And he started with one day like that. After 6 months, he went to 2 days. And within a year, he took a transition out of being a lawyer, does what he loves nowadays, and still is able to get the income he requires to live. That's a good example of how you can try to move towards a life that's driven by love, right? At the end of our life, no one wishes they spent more time at work because everyone, practically everyone, hates work, right? However, if you get to the end of your life and you think, I loved my work, and I really wish I did spend more time at work, then you will have spent a life in an appropriate way. Because if we just live for money, so much of our life will be wasted in that way. At the same time, we require money. So it means being ingenious in how you position your life to meet both of those needs.
So I really focus on value-based medicine, so trying to understand what your values are, right? So which is basically almost like working out what your dharma is. So I give patients a value sheet and we work out what their values are that drive them. So do you think that, so from what you said, dharma, sattva, and prema, right? From those three things, the Sanskrit terms you used, if you can find out, if you don't understand your dharma, then that's more likely to lead to burnout. Is that what you mean? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's like not being in your dharma means, like, say, for example, are you right-handed or left-handed?
I'm ambidextrous. No, I'm not. I'm right-handed. I'm right-handed.
Don't my experiment there. Okay, you're right-handed. Now, if I told you to copy out a page from a textbook by writing with your left hand, just give me some key words of how that would feel or what the experience would be.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah, go on. It's different. What else? Give me as many words. Yeah,
cool. So you want to type or just write?
Well, I'm saying if you were writing with your left hand.
Okay. So it feels a bit foreign. It's different. Foreign. It's quite hard. It's hard. It's unusual. It's very
tiring.
Kind
of tiring.
Yeah, it is a little bit tiring.
Probably do a lousy job.
I don't think I'm that bad, but yeah, a bit lousy.
So this is basically what happens when you live outside of your dharma. When you do something that you're not wired to do, you're slower, you get more tired, you're not able to deliver what you want to deliver, and basically you don't fulfill your potential. So the problem is that 99% of people in the world, either they don't know their dharma, or they know their dharma but they're too scared to live their dharma.
Yes.
That's an interesting one. Let me ask you a question.
Go for it.
Why do you think it is someone may know their dharma? They may know what they're meant to do. They may know what their skills are, their unique talents and abilities and everything. But why would it be that even though they know their dharma, they don't live their dharma? Can you give me some...
Well, there's many patients or many people that I've known, like, you know, my dharma, I had a hole in my heart when I was born. I've got a scar on my chest. You know, I did IT management at uni and I changed my career. I worked in London and I became a doctor because I thought that was my dharma. So, you know, I see many patients who are very unhappy with what they're doing. And so your question is, why is that? Well, there's a multitude of
reasons. Why do people not live their dharma?
Fear, lack of knowledge. Lack of resources, financial constraints, lack of understanding,
expectations of others,
too much information from other people, you know, too much doubt from other people, you know, financial or societal constraints by the world. Those are for example, health issues, potentially mental health issues.
So these are the kind of things we need to deal with in order for someone to ultimately get to their dharma.
Hmm.
So if you don't live in your dharma, life will be much hard, very hard. It's like swimming against the stream. You'll feel like that. Every day you'll feel like you're swimming against the current. But when you live with your dharma, you know, like when you go to the airports and you get on those kind of like walkways where there's like, you know, that, you know, they make you go double fast because it's like an escalator. It's like that when you live in your dharma. You're kind of walking and it's just like you're flying.
Yeah.
You're just going with the wind. You're going with the current because you've tapped into, but if you don't, you're going to be constantly at an uphill struggle. So really finding your dharma, that's where a book like the Bhagavad Gita is like powerful, because it gives very, very deep insights into how to understand the kind of psychophysical framework which we're dealing with, you know. It's amazing to think that many people, they don't even know themselves. Because of the things you said, the noise around them, the expectations, the demands, the constraints. In the noise of the world, we don't hear our own heart. And that's why sitting down with a book like the Bhagavad Gita and trying to disconnect a little bit from all of that noise and understand what is my dharma, what is my purpose, what am I meant to be doing in the limited time I have in this world, and then embracing that life. If you do that, not only will you avoid burnout, but you'll basically thrive. So like, you know what I would say, like, although I'm not criticizing your choice of topic here at all, avoiding burnout, I think the goal of life is not to avoid burnout. The goal of life is to like thrive, to do something amazing. We don't want to just survive in this world. We want to thrive. We want to do something incredible. We want to make a contribution, a difference. We want to touch people's hearts. We want to make impact in a way that makes the world a better place. I personally don't want to spend my whole life trying to avoid burnout. What I want to do is follow my calling. And in following your calling, avoiding burnout almost just becomes like, how can you ever get burnt out if you're doing something you love? How can you ever get burnt out if you're actually contributing in a very natural way according to what your purpose is in this world? You won't get burnt out.
Well, I can say to you, you know, that's, you know, in some ways, you know, I'm happy in my job. I like being a doctor, but at the same time, you know, you kind of mentioned the whole, you want to make an impact, like you want to thrive and, you know, stop surviving, start thriving, right? If you want to do that, right, and you are making many, you know, impacts to many things, but you want to do more, you want to help society more, you're not happy in making small impacts. Does that mean you're in your dharma, or does that just mean you just want to feed your ego? How do you, you know, if you're in your dharma and you're making small impacts, you should be happy. Why should you be like, oh, I want more and more? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. When I joined the monastery, one of the monks said to me, some people love to preach. And he said, some people love the people who they preach to. And he said, my advice to you is be the second one, not the first one. It's one thing to love to preach, but it's another thing to love the people you preach to. When you say, or I say, or anyone says, I want to make an impact on the world, that's wonderful. But why do you want to make an impact on the world? Because you genuinely want to help people? Because you genuinely want to relieve people from their suffering? Because your heart pains to see someone else struggle? If that's the motivation, then that's wonderful. But oftentimes the motivation is our own ego. It's our own personal agenda. It's our own desire for name and fame, or to make a mark and leave a legacy. So it's not just about doing things. And this is very much what spirituality is all about, you know, because it's not just about doing things, but doing things with the right motivation. And when you do things with the right motivation, you won't get burnt out. That's why I said you should be driven by prema, love.
Yes. So how do you find out about your dharma according to being a monk? How would you find out your dharma?
Well, I'll give you three words if you want to find your dharma, right? Analyze, attempt, and ask, okay? So the first thing you have to do is analyze your personality. Nowadays, you can do all these personality tests, you know, 16personalities.com or whatever it may be, and find out more about yourself. So you can look at books like the Bhagavad Gita, which outlines different personality types, you know, different qualities which are very distinguishable, which identify you within a certain fold of people. So the first thing is you have to analyze, you have to introspect, you have to kind of look at yourself and see, you know, where what talents have I got? What qualities have I got? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? What have I historically always done well in? Where have I all historically struggled? Analyze, take time to like look at yourself. Yeah. Second thing is attempt. Sometimes to find your dharma is not just an intellectual thing. You just have to attempt, try different things. Don't be afraid to experiment. Like this lawyer who took one day out from his work to kind of experiment in a different way of working. If he had never done that experiment, he would never have found a better career for himself. So you have to attempt. You have to try different things. Certain things you'll do, you may think like, yeah, I'm definitely a teacher. Well, go and try it out. And you'll know pretty quickly, you know, if you get, you know, annoyed with all those little kids running around, you know, asking you the same question five times and it becomes too stressful for you. So you'll know very quickly whether something is your dharma or not if you attempt different things. And the third thing is ask. Sometimes one English poet, he says, it's difficult to see the picture when you're inside the frame. So you do just need people around you who know you well, who observe you, and who have some kind of wisdom and insight, because their perspective, their feedback, their observations can help you understand what your dharma is. In kind of traditional Indian village kind of education, kids would go to school and they'd have one teacher for 20 years from the age of 5 to 25. And, you know, after 20 years of observing a kid, like, the teacher could probably look at the kid and say like, okay, this is what you need to do. And it carried a lot of weight, because other people's opinions, if they're informed and backed up by genuine wisdom, that can give you a lot of insight. So yeah, that's how you find your dharma. Analyze yourself, attempt different things, and ask trusted friends, and you'll get there.
Thank you. I've got a question from Anita who said, more often than not, we come across situations and you feel helpless and unable to do anything in relation to that. Something like the political or social situations across the world. And we consider ignoring it easier than commenting on it. What do you suggest on how to handle it when you feel helpless?
Thank you for that question. You see, in our life, there are two circles. One circle is a smaller circle, and it's known as the circle of influence. And there's a bigger circle outside of it, which is known as the circle of concern. in the circle of concern are many, many things that you are concerned about, but you may not be able to affect or change. And there's a smaller circle in there known as the circle of influence, which are things that you can change. Now, the gap between the inner circle and the outer circle, that gap, whatever it is, that creates a lot of frustration. So we're all experiencing that because we're concerned about many things in the world that we have no influence over, and it's disturbing. Now, let me tell you something amazing. Whichever circle you focus on expands. If you focus on the circle of concern, the bigger circle, you know what? That circle is going to expand. And as that circle expands, you know what's going to happen, right? Your frustration is going to expand. But if you focus on the circle of influence, that circle expands, and then the frustration decreases. So what I would say is there are many things going on in the world that we feel frustrated about that we can't change. However, in the midst of focusing on all of those things, we forget to focus on the things that we can change. Right? And I'll just leave you with a quote by, I think it was one of a previous pope. He said, "I thought of changing the world, and then I realized it was too difficult, so I thought, let me change my village. I tried that, but I couldn't. I thought, let me change my family. And you know what? They weren't willing to take it. I thought, let me change my wife at least." He said she wasn't having any of it. He said, "In my old age, I realized I should have just changed myself. Because if my wife saw me change myself, maybe she would have changed. And two of us together could have changed our family. And the family could have changed the village. The village could have influenced the country. The country could have influenced the world." Now, we know it's not as simple as that. But the point still stands. Personal resolutions create global revolutions. It's got to begin with us. And we can't spend a life constantly looking around at us, just commenting on how terrible the world is. We got to roll our sleeves up and work in the circle of influence to change what we can. And rest assured, your circle of influence will expand if you focus on it.
Wow. Rexy said, "In this world, religion has been a reason to create differences. It led to wars, and lots of people use the good intentions in people and make them into a political propaganda. In such a world, how do you progress with spiritual thinking with your religion and still not get bogged down with those spreading hatred?" Jake Goody said, beautifully said, yeah.
100%. I totally agree with you. Though I would slightly rephrase, I wouldn't say religion causes war. What I would say is misguided religious practitioners cause war. War in the world has been caused by everything under the sun, religious and non-religious. Many of the greatest wars in the world in history were religiously founded. Many of the wars in history were supposedly about religion, but were actually about land, power, money, and influence. And many wars in the history of the world had no religious connection whatsoever. People want to fight. People have greed within them. People have envy within them. And then they use whatever they can in order to incite emotions within people to create friction. And religion is one of those things. I think we have to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Just as people misuse religion, people misuse many other things in the world. But that doesn't mean there's no beauty. That doesn't mean there's no value. That doesn't mean there's no goodness within religion or any of those other things that people misuse. What we need to really do is get to the essence. What does religion even mean? It comes from the Latin religare. Ligare means to connect, and re means again. So religion literally means that which connects you back to your essence, that connects you, that which connects you back to your spiritual goal. And so what we really need is religious people who are actually connecting, religious people who are actually experiencing deep spirituality. Religious people who are not just doing rituals, but whose character has become beautified by their commitment to something which is beyond this world. And when we find that kind of religion being practiced in the world, that kind of religion exudes love. And that kind of religion is the kind of religion that's going to make the world a better place. So for me, I try not to get bogged down by terminology. Some people don't like the word religion. Some people prefer spiritual. I'm SBNR, spiritual, but not religious. For me, religion in its essence, spirituality in its essence, is all the same thing. It's people who are connecting to a spiritual goal, and who are thereby becoming elevated and enhanced in their own character, and who are ultimately exuding love. And when you have spiritualists or religionists like that, the world becomes a better place. But when you don't have those religious or spiritual people, then everything degenerates, and that's what we see in the world.
Thank you. Suniti Sharma said, much gratitude for the insightful interview. It was amazing, and try to practice the three words you mentioned, sattva, dharma, and prema. Very enjoyable. Thank you. I mean, it's very interesting how you're explaining everything, and the analogies are wonderful. And it's interesting, by talking to you, I really get, it makes me feel very wise, and it makes you think very deeply. You know, it's good to hang out with you. I haven't hung out with you for a long time, but it's very powerful. For those that are trying to find out more about spirituality or trying to understand their purpose, you mentioned the Bhagavad Gita. Like, where can people have a look at it, or where can they connect to you, and what can they see, you know, if they were interested in this kind of stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to do a self promo here, but we do have a website, www.tattva.co.uk. And we have some books there. We have some articles on the Bhagavad Gita. Many of the topics we've talked about today, we've kind of explored on that little website. So if you want, you can put it there in the chat, and people can kind of access that if they want to. We also have a beautiful translation of the Bhagavad Gita, which was translated back in the 60s by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. You can check that out on the internet. You can't miss it, because it's called Bhagavad Gita As It Is. A very beautiful translation of the text. So yeah, you can explore it. It's a beautiful book. Gandhi, he said, whenever doubts haunt me, when disappointments stare me in the face, and I see not one ray of hope on the horizon, I immediately pick up the Bhagavad Gita and find a verse to comfort me. And in the midst of overwhelming sorrow, I feel great hope and inspiration in my life. So that was Gandhi. He was reading that. Einstein read the Bhagavad Gita, and in recent times, Will Smith has been reading the Bhagavad Gita. He said he's finding his inner Arjun. So the main person posing the questions in the Bhagavad Gita is someone called Arjuna, And what you'll find when you read the Bhagavad Gita is that the questions that Arjuna asks are the questions that each one of us ask in our own lives. And in that way, it's a very relevant book. So yeah, take a look, you know, give it a try.
And it's interesting, you know, India is going through a lot of COVID right now. You know, they can't move, they can't do anything. But that quote about Gandhi, when he was talking about how, you know, how he's not got one ray of hope. I know a lot of people in India are suffering. So, you know, reading the Bhagavad Gita as it is will probably be a powerful effect, will probably hopefully help them improve their well-being and life, right? And they're going through so many problems.
Yeah, when we access spiritual knowledge, it gives us another lens. It gives us another lens through which to see the world, you know. According to our vision, we perceive things around us. Two people can see the same thing, but according to their consciousness, they see it very differently. And so the Bhagavad Gita spiritual books are really helping us to upgrade our vision, teaching us to find opportunities, even in difficult situations, to find hope in the midst of chaos, to find wisdom in the amongst struggle. So all of these things are there, and the Bhagavad Gita in that way helps you to interact with the world in such a way that you become happier, healthier, wiser, and just a more wholesome person. We can't change the things around us, but we can change the way we view them and react to them. But the only way we'll be able to do that is if we upgrade our vision, and that comes from interacting with spiritual wisdom.
Wow. Thank you so much for your time, Siddhartha Prabhu. It has been a very amazing and wonderful talk and discussion, as usual. I've been trying to get this guy for ages, so I'm glad he finally agreed to come on. So thank you, Siddhartha Prabhu, for coming. It's been great. And of course, if you want to find you, just www.tattva.co.uk, is it?
That's the one, yeah.
No, that's great. And if you guys want to check out his books, they're amazing as well. Of course, if you like what you're seeing, please like, subscribe, and follow on Instagram.